it hit us and hits the fuel, I mean, the static wicks don't work the way that it should, then boom. Who knows? We have a boom situation. We don't need that.
We don't need that.
So it was really nerve-wracking. But
what would you have done differently going into it, knowing, having experienced it now, and if you were to hit that point of no return?
Welcome to the Aviation Mentors Podcast, the podcast that takes your dreams of flight and turns it into reality.
Sponsored by Strass Financial, financing your flight training.
For pilots, by pilots. I'm Brandon Martini, a commercial pilot and flight instructor.
And I'm Carson Vasquez, I'm a private pilot.
Whether you're a seasoned pilot or beginner with dreams of flight,
Aviation Mentors is your source for expert insights, industry trends, and inspiring stories.
So fasten your seatbelts and prepare for this incredible journey through the skies.
And stay connected with us on social media for exclusive content.
And visit our website at www.aviationmentors.com. And let us be your co-pilot on this adventure.
Welcome back to another amazing and, of course, awesome episode of the Aviation Mentors Podcast. Happy December. Are you excited for I was going to say Halloween for some reason. Halloween. And then I was like, Christmas giving. I don't know what's going on right now. Christmas. Are you happy for Christmas and Hanukkah and all the other holidays that happen in December?
All of them. Yeah, I'm really excited. It's going to be my birthday right after that. So It's Christmas, New Year's, birthday. So it's just a straight two-week bender.
And then my sister's birthday is in between your birthday and Christmas, or in between your birthday and New Year's.
What is it, the 26th or the 30th?
The second.
Oh yeah. You said everyone's, tell the people. That's crazy.
Yeah. So everybody in my family is born the day after a holiday.
Your birth is when?
The 5th of July, day after 4th. My sister is the day after January 1st, so January 2nd. My mom and my other sister have the same exact birthday, which is May 6th. So the day after, after Cinco de Mayo. Yeah. And then my dad is born the day after election day every once in a while.
We'll count it.
Yeah, we can count that.
And then overall, it's.
And then Austin was born the day after Mother's Day.
That's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's all anomaly. That's kind of crazy.
I know. It is pretty nuts. But now everyone knows my entire family's birthday. So welcome.
And your mother's maiden name is the street you grew up on, your first dog's name.
You know what's really funny is most of those things we can all find on the internet of everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's wild. And
I'm trying to think about it too hard.
Yeah, you shouldn't. That's why you should have two-factor authentication on everything. Everything.
As annoying as it gets.
Yeah, which I do, by the way. All my sensitive stuff is right here, two-factor authentication.
If you lose that phone, you're done.
I have backups.
Sounds ominous.
I do, though. Do have backups. So
well, you should have backups after you deleted all of Austin's stuff on his
phone. I know. Seriously, that was horrible. So out of the fun fact about everybody in my family being born after the day after a holiday, which is kind of funny now that we talk about after holiday. I won the bet that Austin was going to be born the day after Mother's Day. Everyone was like, no, he's going to be born on the 2 days after that, which was his due date. It was the 11th was a due date. I was like, no, he's going to be born the day after the holiday.
Like everyone else.
Like everybody else. He's a
like
martini.
A martini, damn
yeah,
it.
Yeah, this happens. Yeah, there's nothing that changes, right? But outside of this, let's talk about some aviation stuff. I mean, it's fun to go talk about personal things. And unless we have a personal big win like we did for you getting engaged.
Thank you. I do what I can.
And my mom beating cancer, we can talk about aviation like we normally do in the Aviation Mentors Podcast.
That's right. We're pilots.
We're pilots.
Pilots.
Pilots. So the first question I want to ask today, I'll ask you, Carson, as a aspiring instrument rated pilot for the future. How do I know when a forecast thunderstorm is something I can safely navigate around?
You call Leidos WX Brief and you ask that question. That's kind of a silly answer, but that's usually my first step when I see a thunderstorm is in the area and I know it's coming either on the METAR or the TAF. I want to call WX Brief and I want to talk to them about where they think that thunderstorm is going, where I'm going, and if either of those paths cross or I get within about 20 miles, I mean, realistically, I don't want to even be within 20 miles. The air just gets rough, the whole region. It's not fun.
I believe that the PHAC or the Aviation Weather Handbook says do not fly within 25 nautical miles of a thunderstorm.
Okay. I was pretty close for the top of my head.
You were pretty close.
Yeah. And regardless, I don't want to get anywhere near it. So we're in Riverside. That's usually where we take off from. And the thunderstorms around us always seem to be in the high desert, which is however many miles north.
40.
And, you know, kind of a Big Bear area. So we always see them on the horizon, but usually at Riverside, it's pretty calm. Not saying we don't get thunderstorms, but that's the reason that I want to call WX Brief, make sure those thunderstorms aren't going to move farther south or west and come and affect anything I'm going to do that day. But like I said, the whole area around a thunderstorm is going to be kind of rough. It's not fun to fly in. So if you don't have a mission or a training, something that's actually planned, I'd recommend against even risking it.
Yeah, just stay home or go to the airport and go to the cafe and go watch the storms pass by. I have a different perspective, and I also have a story surrounding this. The 25-mile thing, that's a thing, right? But I would argue for 50 miles. And one day, I was flying back from Oshkosh, and I was in my 172, and I'm high-altitude flying, and I'm going through. There's this little pass you can get through in a 172 when you're going the northern route through the Rockies, and you've got to go through Colorado, through Utah, and then you can start coming south over to Vegas and then come back. And I was doing that trip. I remember being there with Austin. He was a little kid, and his mom was with me. And we had the entire plane packed with things in the plane. I mean, all their camping supply, everything from Oshkosh. It was wild how much stuff we had. And so we could only get to a certain altitude. Going very slow because we're very high altitude in the 172, and there's weather coming in everywhere. And there's not very many airports when you go through that. I mean, you either have to get to the next airport or you have to turn around, and there is a point of no return. Once you get to this point of no return, you cannot turn back around and go to an airport. You have to move forward. And if you can't move forward and you have to turn around, you will run out of gas.
And anytime you have a point of no return situation, you should A, try and avoid it, but B, it's terrifying.
It is terrifying.
You have no option but to keep going.
Exactly. So I had this option, but to keep going. And I was just thinking about where I could land on a road. I mean, that's kind of the options that you come up with. And I was a semi-new pilot. I think I had less than 100 hours when I was doing this flight.
You took Austin's mom, all your stuff, all the way to Oshkosh and back.
Yeah, maybe I had 120 hours, but no more than that.
I mean, that's...
I had no instrument rating. I know that because I was prepping my instrument. Check ride got canceled. So I didn't finish my instrument rating at that point.
Oh, but you could wing it if you had to.
No, I could not. Thank you. I could not.
Oh, thank you for answering that.
I could not.
Oh, it's good to see you humble.
Yes. And I was not a great instrument pilot then. I would have failed my check ride, to be honest. It didn't happen, but that was for different reasons. But I ended up getting about 15 miles away from a thunderstorm. Because I had no option. I was going to either crash into a mountain, I was going to go IFR, or I was going to go into this thunderstorm. And I'm there with my family at the time. And what do they tell me? They say, how many souls on board? And just imagine your family hearing that, right? And you having to say, I have 3 souls on board. That was not a fun thing to say, especially when everyone's asking, why are they asking us this question? And I'm like trying to tell everybody to stay calm because it's getting really bumpy in the airplane.
You have to stay calm most of all, which is hard.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, uh-oh, I've never had somebody ask me how many souls are in the airplane. Did I mess up that bad? Am I going to die?
Well, that's why your panel has a isolate button, right?
Well, I don't know if it did or not. And I didn't use it at that time. But I will say that that was one of the most nerve-wracking things that I've ever flown. And AOPA or somebody does one of those things that said, what did I learn from flying that? That could be one of those episodes. It really could. I wonder if I could look up the data on that flight and go back and do one of those episodes. I think it'd be pretty cool. If we could, maybe we could do that, Mark. We could go look back and see if we can find the data from that flight. And I guarantee that it's out there somewhere because I know I have it in my logbook.
Yeah, someone has it.
And I could find it probably within 10 minutes in my logbook. So we could find that data and look up what the weather was like on that. If we can find the ATC communication, that would be epic. I don't know if that would still exist because that was about 10 years ago at this point, but it was really nerve-wracking. So my personal rule is 50 miles away. I just stay away. I don't need to be near that thunderstorm. I don't need to be near big black clouds.
What did you really experience? You said it was really bumpy, but like, what was it?
That was it. That's all I experienced. It was really bumpy. I could see lightning in the distance. I was afraid that lightning might hit us.
You don't want to get caught in it.
No, I mean, if it hit us and hits the fuel, I mean, the static wicks don't work the way that it should, then boom. Who knows? We have a boom situation. We don't need that.
We don't need that.
So it was really nerve-wracking. But
what would you have done differently going into it, knowing, having experienced it now? And if you were to hit that point of no return, as a pilot now, would you have even gotten to that point?
I would have called the people that I work with or work for, kind of boss type of thing, and I've said, I'm sorry, I'm going to be 2 days late for work. And I would have sat where I was at, which was like Black Rock City with the monuments. I would have stayed there for a couple more days, let the storm pass, or I would have went south and not tried to cross the Rockies like I did. And I would have went a different direction, but I knew that that would have cost me a lot more money and fuel, like almost double because of where I was at. And I didn't have a lot of money at that time. So I probably would have either waited it out or went the other route. One cost me more money. Actually, both cost me more money because I would lose money 2 days worth of work. And I only got paid if I went to work. I didn't have paid time off or anything like that because I was an independent contractor. So if I couldn't work, then I didn't make money. And then I couldn't have paid for the extra fuel, all these different things. So I would have
waited. You can see how you feel these external pressures that we talk about. This is a really great example of them.
They were very external pressures.
You had pressures from the family to get everyone home, pressures on yourself to not spend more money on gas going a long way around, pressures to make it through that point of no return. And the biggest thing we try in aviation is to alleviate all those pressures because they make poor decisions.
Very bad decisions when those happen. So I know that was just one question, and I wanted to dive a little deeper on that. When I saw that on our list,
yeah, that was a good one.
I already knew the story I had to tell, and it was definitely something I learned a lot from. And I will say that I will never do that type of stuff again. So I learned it really early in my pilot career, luckily, which was really fantastic.
Good. You know what time it is, Carson?
Time's up, Brandon.
It's time to talk about one of our favorite companies.
Which company would that be?
Aviation Mentors is excited to be sponsored by the one and only Stratus Financial, dedicated to supporting the next generation of future aviators.
You know, Stratus Financial really understands the financial challenges that students face in pursuing their aviation dreams. That's why they offer student loans specifically tailored to aspiring pilots.
With competitive rates and flexible repayment plans, Stratus Financial helps take your aviation education to new heights.
So go visit their website today at www.stratus.finance. Just to be clear, that is not .com, it's .finance. And embark on your journey towards a sky full of possibilities.
Carson, it's time to get back to what we do best.
The show.
The show.
Let's shift gears a little bit to maintenance a little bit. What do you think?
These are all for you. You're not a maintenance czar, but you definitely know what you're talking about and what you're looking at, especially when it comes to books and pre-buys.
Mm.
You've done a lot. I don't know if that's just because you have some experience as an aircraft broker or if you just spent way too much time looking at the logbooks.
maybe a little bit of both. So what's the question, Carson?
It's what pre-buy inspection items are most overlooked by first-time owners?
It's not just first-time owners. It's mechanics in general. I would say mechanics are typically really good at fixing an airplane. I would say most of them are not that great at documentation. There's obviously the big shops are, but their logbooks throughout the years of a plane. So if you go look at a plane, a lot of these planes we're flying are 30, 40, 50 years old. Even the new ones that came out in the 2000s, the SP models, they're still 20, 25 years old at this point, right? There's going to be a time where these planes were not handled by a Cessna pilot center or a really good mechanic, or they got stuck somewhere and they had other mechanics have to work on it, things like that. So the problem really is airworthiness directives, especially the planes that are 50, 60 years old and the ones that have complicated airworthiness directives that have to be done either incrementally or at certain hour points, or people, mechanics, they'll lie, by the way, they'll just put all airworthiness directives complied with as of this date. And they think that counts. No, that does not count. I've read logbooks where I've seen an AD that was supposed to be done in like 1975 that's been marked off as all ADs complied with for 50 years at this point, maybe 48, whatever, 46, whatever it's been. And then you go look and you try to find the logbook entry on when, let's just say it's a carburetor, right? When that carburetor was changed or when that fitting was changed. And you can go look at the airplane and it still has the original part number on there from when it was at the manufacturer, right? And it says it's been complied with every single time. That means that every mechanic that's ever annualed that plane since then did not actually go double check every single logbook entry and cross-reference that that AD was complied with on that date. And that is by far the biggest, most overlooked item for first-time owners.
You sound very passionate about this.
Oh, and big time.
I never understood it until I looked at an AD list.
Oh, I mean, especially the older 172s or Cherokees, things like that, they've got like 80 or 100 of them.
Well, yeah, they have 50 years of people finding problems that structurally happen over time, and it's not something that you can test. You can't test longevity, and that's why we have AD lists, is because we find, like, what was it, the Warrior that had the wing spar issue?
Yeah, I mean, PA-28 140s, I think 160s and 180s.
They had an issue where the wing spar would act, the part that connected the wing to the actual body of the frame, it would start rusting and
corrode,
become unreliable. And it happened after, it was only discovered after a CFI and student crash because the wing fell off.
I think it might have even been a DPE, a student.
Even worse. But I remember hearing about it. And I remember there was immediately an AD that went out for everyone to go get that inspected. And, you know, that's a pretty catastrophic case. But I remember that, you know, Rich had a hangar full of planes that all needed to be inspected. And he checked out every single one of them.
Yeah. And we only found a couple that actually had issues. But the ones that had issues had major ones.
Yeah. It's not something to mess around about. I mean, there's a reason that these AD lists come out in the first place. And it takes effort to actually review logbooks of the plane, make sure everything's complied with.
And I'm actually going to say there's one other thing that if you're a first-time buyer that you need, because you're the maintenance technician that's doing the pre-buy on this, they should be able to go look up all those ADs. But you should too, as an owner, you should be able to go look at those logbooks and cross-reference. Like, this AD in 1975 on November 1st was complied with on November 15th, whatever it was, right? You should be able to check that. Now, if things weren't complied with on time, it doesn't matter. Back then, it just matters that they were complied with, right? Because now the airplane is airworthy again. So don't get me wrong. If they did it on the wrong date or they realized they messed up and they did it 6 months later or something like that.
Statute of limitations for it has passed. You're good.
I mean, it's not even statute of limitations. At least it's been done.
No, right? But I mean, it's happened so long ago. The things that you have to worry about are now and the current ones. And how do you make sure that your mechanic actually knows what they're looking for and check it?
I don't know. You have to gain trust.
How do you gain trust in the mechanic? What'd you do?
He worked at my flight school and I became friends with him, and that's how I gained the trust of my mechanic. And then now I've become business partners with him. So I don't know. I have a unique story. I don't know how most people would do it. I don't know. I would go in and go talk with the mechanic and see if they know what they're talking about, especially if you've already been a pilot for a little while. So I would also say there's one other thing, which I was alluding to a minute ago, that if you are buying a plane, you need to make sure that there are no liens on the airplane. Even liens that weren't properly, I've seen airplanes that have liens from 1960 that are still on the aircraft, and they might have already switched hands 10 times, and there might be a bank that went out of business 50 years ago or got sold to somebody else and got sold to another place, and it's going to be really hard, or the person who had the loan on the plane is already dead. I mean, these are things that are really hard to clear. It's very possible to clear these items, but there are liens on airplanes that are improperly filed, and there are liens on the airplanes that are improperly released, which is a really big one. I've noticed improper releases happen on a ton, probably, I don't know, 10 to 15% of airplanes I've brokered or bought and sold have issues with these liens.
Really?
Yeah. So I use a company called Aerospace Reports. I'm a big fan of theirs. They have an AOPA member discount if you use them. I always get the full report. I can't remember. It might be $250 or something. But they also do a title search on there. And they have a title search just on the title only for like $80 or something. But at the bare minimum, do the title search. And if you're using a broker with an escrow account, they will typically insist upon that. And Aerospace Reports also can run all those reports for you and be that that escrow.
I mean, in the grand scheme of what you're spending on the plane, making sure the title's clean, I think is pretty worth it.
It's totally worth it.
For $250, that's, I'd say, a necessary addition.
Yeah, and if it comes out clean, fantastic. And if it comes out that a company owns the plane and the individual selling it and they signed a contract as the individual rather than the company, little things like member manager or managing member for an LLC or just member, or putting the name of the company and not putting the name of the person who's authorized to sign that underneath, these little tiny things can derail your sale of that airplane or purchase of that airplane. So I would be very careful of those things, especially for first time owners. Go use a broker maybe, or call me. Let me help you. I'll tell you all the things you're screwing up on and all the things that I've already messed up on over my time, the past decade of buying and selling airplanes.
It's better to learn from someone else's mistakes than make them yourself.
Exactly. And I've done a little bit of both.
Yeah. Well, you know, that was I just kind of dropped like a good psychology line, and we have a good psychology section on here. There was one I wanted to hit, and it feels really silly, but it's, how do I recover after making a mistake on the radio? I actually have a...
You just start crying, you start breaking down and say, Jesus, take the yoke.
You know, I've tried that. He has not taken the yoke yet. So it must mean that I still need to fly the plane.
FYI, yoke is actually a connector that connects everything behind the panel.
Yeah, it's the control
wheel. It's the control wheel. I know I've gone down a diatribe of this several times.
Oh, there's diatribe again. I haven't heard that in a while. There you go. You're getting smarter. I made a mistake when I was flying with Matt. Before I was even a student pilot, didn't have a student pilot license, but he was
certificate. I had to.
I'm gonna go down a diatribe on you, sir. I have opinions, but I was flying with Matt, and I wasn't even a student pilot yet, and didn't have my student pilot certificate yet. And we're flying through it was like Rancho Cucamonga area, so there was a little bit of airspace with Ontario you had to be careful of. And he wanted me to make a radio call. And he coached me through several times, wrote down exactly what I needed to say. And I screwed it up right off the bat. And I went, oh, fudge, on the radio.
Oh, no way.
And it was not with Ontario. I learned later it was with SoCal Approach. And I was like, okay. Because he slapped my hand off, off the push to talk so fast. I realized that that is not the way that you need to handle making a mistake on the radio. And since then, it gave me a lot of anxiety about talking on the radio. So I feel like I can relate to a lot of people who have questions like this.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest thing I could offer as advice is repeat it in your head as many times as you need to, and even write it down. You have a kneeboard right there.
I say write it down.
And when I started the podcast, right, I had to write down everything I wanted to say because I was so nervous. And you're going to have the same nerves. Write down what you need to say and remember the basics, you know, who you are, what you're flying, where you're going, what you're doing. There's a better way to say it, but
yeah, there is.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how I remember it. But you know, remember the basics of radio communication and write those down and until you nail it. First time you do nail it though, and you have a perfect call, you're going to gain so much confidence. It's a huge boost.
Who you're talking to, who you are, and what you want.
See, that's the CFI answer.
And then also, if you're going back and forth with them, then it changes a little bit, but that's the initial. I would also say, if you have an embarrassing radio mistake, just own up to it. I mean, it's not a big deal. Remember, you're not talking to big, bad people in the sky, right? You're not talking to those omnipotent. Omnipotent beings.
Yes, I feel like it sometimes, though.
Yeah, they can talk down to you, too, every once in a while, but they also are very encouraging as well. So if you make a mistake, just own it. One time, I'll tell a story how I made a mistake with radios. I was with my son, Austin, and I turned down the radios to nothing because I was trying to stop him from crying because he was a little kid, and he was crying in the plane. I don't know what was going on. He was in a car seat, probably. He's like being 5 years old and just...
Probably the air pressure.
I don't know. We were in the pattern.
Oh.
And he was just scared or nervous or whatever he was.
He knew you were flying.
Yeah, he knew I was flying. And I turned down the radio, and instead of turning down just his, I turned down both of ours. And I don't know how I did it, but I ended up having to do kind of the light gun signals to land. And I I squawked his emergency and landed. I mean, it's just kind of what I did. And then I get on the ground. I'm like, uh-oh, I just turned the radio down. Yeah,
that's a mistake.
It was a mistake. And I just owned up to it. I apologized to the tower and they didn't have to write any reports or anything. And everybody was safe. There were no problems. And we got on the ground just fine.
Yeah. We're people. They're people too. Everyone's gonna make mistakes. Like, a lot of them are pretty funny, especially when they make it to, the ATC YouTube channels.
Oh yeah.
Oh, there's so many good ones. Like, was it Kennedy? Oh, there's that one controller at Kennedy.
Oh, I don't know. There's somebody who always makes some nice jokes on these planes.
I love talking ATC, and especially once you get to know the people, especially when you're flying at that one airport so many times, you can pick up pretty much like their shift schedule.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
So, oh, who's up there today? Oh, cool. I know I'm going to be able to get in the pattern.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, I think we have a pretty good place to end. What do you think?
Yep, I think that's a good time to end. So thank you all for listening or, of course, watching us today. We really appreciate it. Make sure you reach out to us on our emails. If you don't have it by now, then you should be listening to all the other episodes. Or reach out to us on LinkedIn. We'd really appreciate it. Also, don't forget to hit all of the buttons. Like, follow, subscribe, share, stream. I don't know, any of the buttons, please. It really helps us grow our podcast, and more importantly, grow the aviation community, who we like to support and help. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening to us today. Can't wait to see you on the next one.
Thank you, everyone. And as a wrap up for the day, remember, here to guide you in your aviation journey. So fly safe and enjoy the ride.
See ya.